Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Just received a note from someone and it essentially talked about the origin of the term pantry or buttery. And the point that was being made was that pantries were usually associated with storage above ground, while the buttery was usually associated with storage closer to the ground floor. Because these were the days, of course, of no refrigeration. And what they often did is they used large stone slabs that would be used to keep the food cool before refrigeration was domestically available. So apparently where the storage was close to the ground or in a cellar, as the case may be, the room was referred to as a buttery. And I think over time what happened is that the, or sorry, over time what happened is suggesting that the usage of the term has evolved, and in large and I guess wealthy households, the butler would essentially dispense access to this area where the food was served and so on. As Tony was saying just now on the program, I guess it was associated with some level of prosperity, which yeah, those days are now gone. Dr. Brastax, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Good morning and welcome. 4341790. You can also WhatsApp me, 266-IVOB, or you can email me, peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning, morning. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good.
Earlier in your program, you had might have made two statements.
Yep.
One pertaining to the landlords, and the other is the person was saying that the landlord is getting the moratorium. Let me just clarify, because everybody's saying that the banks are giving you an ease for these 3 months. The ease is only coming to persons for, well, this is both the banks and the credit unions. They're only giving you the ease to persons who are actually unemployed. So even if you're working but on reduced hours, you do not qualify. You don't qualify for that period in terms of the landlords giving an ease. I have had situations where the tenants probably pay for the first 3 months, and then after that, they don't pay. They change the lock. You, as the landlord, probably would supplement, and you have the bill, which would be the light and the water or whatever, and you pay those things. But obviously, the tenant is in the house. You're not getting the rent, and those things are being accumulated, and everything is basically at you. The tenants oftentimes refuse to pay. If you put them in court, that's another set of money that you have to look for in order to get them out. And now I have friends of mine who have become unemployed, who have tenants in the house. The tenants received eviction notice. Some actually had like things put against them where they had the judgment was that they pay the rent, the legal fees, whatever, whatever. They refuse, and they're telling them they're not leaving. So
you are a landlord?
well, I would say. Kind of.
No, I mean, are you speaking for yourself or are you speaking for someone
Yes,
else?
I'm speaking for myself.
Right.
And yes, you would do the ease on a case-by-case basis, but at the end of the day, Peter, it's human nature, because there are some who would be in your house and refuse to pay. They pay first 2-3 months. All is well. I'm going to speak about a friend of mine. Up to last year, he had a guy in his house. The guy changed his locks. The guy ran up his light bill to an exorbitant fee, which obviously he would not have been able to pay. The light was disconnected, and the gentleman brought in a generator. So then the neighbors obviously would have complained, and even up to the day when
Ma'am, I understand the problem, because I have acted as an agent from time to time, so I understand the challenges associated with rentals. But you understand the point I've been trying to make, don't?
I understand your point.
That's all I'm saying. I do not think, listen, I know that this business can be a challenging one, because you're often dealing with people in where they live, which is always a vulnerable thing. And a lot of times people, when they move into a place and they have rented for a little while, they begin to feel that they have rights. And one of the rights they feel they have is not to pay the rent. And eviction is always an emotionally challenged and charged issue. And I appreciate that it is not the easiest thing to do. Having said all of that, right, we're in a different time now. All I'm saying is that when you are at war, normal circumstances are varied, right? So my thing is that if you were in the process of evicting someone, I would say that this is not the time to do it. If you have a situation where you have a tenant that had arrears owing to you for several months in the past, and that person is now saying, well, you know what, you got to give me ease because of COVID, right? You just have to ask yourself, is it wise to pursue the eviction of that person regardless? Has that person shown good faith? Or alternatively, should you be a little lenient and not go forward? Now, I can't answer that question for you. You as the landlord got to know for yourself. But certainly the situation that I spoke about earlier with the email that I read, where the individual said, I have said to the landlord, I am not working. I don't know if I'm going to have a job in another 2-3 months. I don't know. I give you half and say, let me see what we could do, right? And the person objecting and said that they have a mortgage to pay, they have bills to pay. So I understand that there's no blanket situation. I just think it has to be a case-by-case basis. And then there are other people whose rent, quite frankly, is so small. And I think that this is a bigger issue, where they're paying next to nothing, or as Bajans would say, next gain to nothing for rent. And one would think that regardless of the situation that presents itself, they could continue to pay. Like a lot of people who are in NHC units. There's nobody in the NHC unit that should be raising the kinds of concerns, because the NHC rents are cheap, really, really cheap. So you should be able to scrounge out that money from somewhere. But I guarantee that in this crisis, a lot of those people are going to stop paying the rent too. So you get my point?
Yes, but I just want to clarify, because everybody's saying, everybody getting this little ease from the banks and ease for the credit unions. Oh, no. The only bank who actually said that they're going to waive the fees and give everyone across the board the 3 months ease is Scotiabank. Mm. Everyone else is saying, well, really and truly, if you're working for 3 days or whatever, you're still working, so you still got them commitments to make, so let me get my money.
I feel that, as you said, it's a case-by-case thing, and it's something that has to be taken with. You got to consider the issues, and I think that as a landlord, you do that anyhow, because you are probably not going to evict somebody who is a single woman with several children, who has a good record of paying, and then all of a sudden they start to catch a little bit of problem. You're not going to do that. So I do feel that, as you said, it is a case-by-case thing, but they're not hard and fast rule. But I'm just saying that I do think that there are some landlords that are being unreasonable. And they're being unreasonable and not understanding that these are not normal times, you know?
Peter.
Yes, ma'am.
What I have realized within the past couple of days is that you learn human beings at the end of the day. Right now, there are some people who will actually come together as a unit and assist each other, do different little things for each other across the board. And then there are some who would have the tendency to profit off of people's pain. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, as I said, and I continue to say, this is not a normal situation. This is something which it has a ripple effect to each and everyone, because you might be able to work, but how many of your bills now can you actively afford to pay at this time comfortably? Because you are put in a situation now where you have to look, if you're someone who requires medication, you have to make sure you have your medication. So if all of your medication is not covered, you still have to pull your pocket for that. You still want to make sure that you have food in your house. You have the correct cleaning supplies or whatever. And it mentally is going to play a part on you.
It will.
The financial institutions right now, some will assist you. And I guess now, because of the COVID and the long lines and the restrictions, I'm not a person who prefers to do things via the email or whatever, because I know right now everyone is at home. And
you don't like to, or you like to?
I try not to.
Or you like person-to-person?
I prefer a person-to-person interaction. Wow. So I could actually, because sometimes
you would get away plenty, boy.
Why?
What about WhatsApp?
Well, if it's a WhatsApp, yes.
Okay.
If it's a WhatsApp, yes. Right now, you could WhatsApp call depending on the internet that you have, because right now, everyone is working from home. The children are at home because they have the whole trade and learning set up, and obviously, that's going to pull on your internet, your data usage or whatever. But at the end of the day, you still need to have that level of information, and the information that came out was a general, this general thing, saying, oh, well, this is what is happening. But when you go and you speak to these institutions directly, you recognize, really and truly, that's not the case.
Maybe someone needs to speak to the institutions again, and the institutions need to come to a Christian understanding regarding what we're facing. Because the point I was making on Tuesday is that in Barbados, you may not necessarily be touched. You may not be working in the halal industry, but in almost every single household, someone is. So there are some of us who are fortunate to work in households where you have two people, the public servants, the teachers or whatnot. And that's where the income comes in. And the presumption is that those people will continue to be paid. But the reality is that
eventually they'll stop because
the government taxes the hotel sector to get money to pay teachers,
to pay salaries.
Right. So then the hotel sector to tax.
Fail to realize that I have persons who say, "Oh well, everything that's given to the hotels, every little leeway that's get to the hotels is get this, and we don't get anything." But now, in the light of COVID, everybody recognizes that the hotel industry is was the factor that was actually driving us. Like I actually interacted with some guests, and I must commend the Prime Minister for all that she has done, because even guests relaying and watching everything that has taken apart in Barbados, regardless of regards to our stage 0 or 1, 2, they felt comfortable. They were afraid to go back to where they were coming from because of the uncertainty.
All right, ma'am. It was good chatting with you, and thank you for the clarification that you brought. We take a break, and when we come back, we have more of Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I have a WhatsApp message here from a Reverend H. Malcolm Gibbs Tate, who is a social and political advocate, and today he is extremely upset with your humble servant. He says, "What absolutely rubbish are you exposing over the airways this morning? On what possible grounds would you be suggesting that the Democratic Labour Party could receive the subvention? Are you really prepared to give taxpayers money to a party that failed to obtain even one seat in Parliament? Bishop Adderley won a seat in Parliament and legitimately crossed the floor. Our constitution allows for there to be an opposition in Parliament. Someone had to do it, and Bishop Adderley did. Because you have a microphone in front of you doesn't give you a right to utter nonsensical rantings." Well, what I would say to you, Reverend Malcolm H. Gibbs Tate, that you do not have a microphone in front of you, and you often utter nonsensical rantings by way of WhatsApp. And I will say to you in response that this is my perspective. The Democratic Labour Party gained 40%, sorry, the Democratic Labour Party gained 30% support in the last election, which is the second largest body of support gained by any political party. The principle of political party reform suggests that the work that is done by political parties ought to be funded by taxpayers in some way, shape, or form. The principle that was established said that once a party had parliamentary representation, that party should get the money. I do not believe that at that time it was envisaged that we would have a situation where parties would opportunistically form. He crossed the floor as an individual, and he said he will occupy the opposition benches. He later formed a party. That party did not contest the last election. So as nonsensical as you may think, Reverend Malcolm H. Gibbs Tate, the reality of the situation is that there is a case that can be made for the DLP to benefit from its subvention. I am not saying it is possible within the context of our current arrangement, but I do believe that it would make sense for them to have access to those monies. And indeed, I think it would make more sense for them to have access to those monies in the current situation where Reverend Adderley is trying to gain access to it. So to you and to Reverend Asley and to all others, I would say this. I'm very happy that he is not being able to benefit from the money. And I do not think that anything should be done to help him benefit from the money, because it is my contention, and it continues to be, that the move to form an opposition party was all that represent 30% of Barbadians in terms of party support. If anyone is to get a share of money, I think that it should be that organization. And I'm sorry, I really do feel the Democratic Labour Party needs to break their stony silence on this issue and say something about it. They all have all kinds of things to say about what the government is doing, but never a word has been said in respect of the fact that the legitimacy of opposition politics in Barbados right now is being thwarted for all intents and purposes. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. Peter. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Once I hear you, I'll be good.
All right. Well, I'm happy to hear that, sir.
All this, you know, as I admire you for a lot of things.
Yeah. Hope I am provocative.
There's a lot of things, man. Not only being provocative, but a lot of things that I don't share your views with. And you call this got the arguments about it, but I like it. Yeah. Right? And even just now, they have spoken to the last caller, and they're making the statement, these people must come to Christian understanding as a non-Christian. Like you're still using these terms. So I was going to laugh at these things, right? And the other thing I was thinking about just now is the discussion you had with that wordsmith gentleman. I can't remember, but he speaks very, very nice and things. We was talking about the death penalty and whatever and thing. And your argument has always been that you are totally against it. Mm-hmm. And that you went on to say that if that's the case, we should hang people too for adultery.
Yes.
And these type of things.
Yes.
And I would like to ask you this question. Is adultery a crime?
Well, it's a sin.
We have to differentiate between the sin and the crime. Is adultery a crime? Why would you kill me because I have a relationship? You understand?
That's a reasonable point.
Listen.
But perhaps it should be.
Wait. No. Also, perhaps nothing. We had this discussion already. And you were telling me that when they abolished the hanging law in Trinidad, just before, I beat it, was started already, and quick, so Cheney and his gang were executed.
Right.
And you said it still didn't stop crime. Still didn't stop the murders.
Mm-hmm.
But a gentleman, a Trinidadian who has been living here for a while, came on this program, and I believe that you hear his comments. He said it had stopped, but only because of the law that had just passed, it started back. And it escalated from then until now. I told you the last conversation we had with this thing is that what we are seeing now in our country, the majority of these murders that we are seeing are revenge killings. And I said to you, if we hang the perpetrator, the chain would stop. We had a lengthy discussion about this here. The other thing, because we want to be very brief, I know a lot of people want to get on. The other thing I want to discuss with you is that you have been wrong about a number of things.
Not many.
Listen, you saying not many. I can't say this because you got a view about a lot of things.
Right.
But many of these things, Christianity and whatever, you are totally wrong about.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I want to do this morning, Peter?
Yes, sir.
I have been hearing you talking about our culture and how we should import the things and whatever and things. But now, you have come to the realization. You have come now to realize that what the people were saying for a long time about planting more food and whatever, it has come now to a stage where you now has totally agreed and shift your stance on this matter. But hopefully, in times to come, you would have to rethink, admit to certain things that you have always been wrong about.
Mm-hmm. But it can happen the other way too.
Yeah, no. It can't happen the other way for you.
No, but it can happen the other way for you.
No. What? No. Not for me. I think it happens more for me. It happened for you because your mind was wavering you admitted this, from an early stage. What was the purpose? You going to church. You was going to church to please your mother and them.
Mm-hmm.
But you always had these type of doubts or whatever. about what good it is to be, you know,
yeah,
a Christian,
yeah,
or whatever. And only yesterday I heard you say that you admire the structure, the churches,
the
and
buildings,
whatever,
yeah, yeah.
But you aren't going in then.
Yeah. But well, I go in them for like funerals and
right. But then you said I've only pick it up because you know, some eulogy sometime back too.
I do, right?
So, right. So I like to know, because we always have to go back to the subject of this Christianity and what it means and whatever. But you know that the virus now is taking up most of these things, and we will give the people, because some will have very good points, and I will rest my case for you for today.
But I appreciate your call, and you know the agricultural thing has been a painful realization for me in light of what has happened currently. And I think what is important now is that we all appreciate that these circumstances have never existed before. Mm-hmm. It's creating an environment globally where we have to start thinking about a number of the things that we do on a regular basis. And for that reason, yeah, I mean, life will be different after September 11th. Life changed. And I think that this is a life-changing exercise. And one of the things that might have to change is the whole concept of food security. So I am on board. Sorry, I'm not too big to admit that I am wrong sometimes.
Just a minute, Peter.
Sorry?
When Mr. Wiggum was talking about this this place, we call it a pantry and whatever, and thing,
battery,
right?
Battery.
Yeah. And a pantry. There was two things that we was talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would remember carefully, and anybody that in this age group or older would tell you that the poor person who cannot afford these things, right? You know what they used to do? They used to dig a hole in the ground and put the potatoes and carrots and thing in.
Mm.
Because that's why I believe that what you were saying with the person that emailed you was very right.
Yeah,
and
with the seller.
They want to keep the food right. Close to the ground,
mm-hmm.
because it stays longer.
Cool.
It preserve longer. So that's all for the day, Peter. We will catch up another time.
Well, yeah. It was good chatting. You know, the agriculture point you made, the religion point, it can take me a while to get to that, unfortunately. And there was a third point you made too, which I thought was interesting. This is regarding the death penalty. Also a view that I am still holding very hard and fast to. I've had a couple of comments about my comments on the death penalty on the WhatsApp chat, and people are essentially digging in the heels and saying, you know, if someone is killed, they can't be killed. They can't kill again. And while that's not untrue, I also would argue the point that, you know, the process of executing someone, I think what we have found over time has been challenging. One of the points that has to be made, even to people like myself who would love to see it abolished, that the Pratt & Morgan decision, which imposed a time limit on the execution, has made it difficult to execute anyone. Because if you're going to execute someone, that person has to be given the benefit of a fairly lengthy appeal process. We had a situation with a murder the other day, which was where one of the prostitutes murdered another one. And it was done in pretty much broad daylight. Well, it was done at night, but ultimately it was done in the full view of others. That case was concluded in a relatively short space of time. I think it was one of the first occasions that a guilty verdict has been entertained for such a matter. Were we under the death penalty scenario, the original scenario, where a person charged with murder could only be convicted or could only be sentenced to death, which was the mandatory aspect of it? Were we under that regime? That case would continue probably for the next 10 or 15 years, because the lady would have been tried, she would have been convicted, and then she would have a series of appeals all the way up to whatever international appeal bodies we have. It's a time-consuming and exhausting process, while this approach allows us to bring matters like that to a close. We appreciate that the crime was a crime of passion. We appreciate that it was probably not what she was intended to do. And this gives the law the opportunity to dispense with that matter, for society to have its aggravation responded to in relatively short order, and for us to focus our legal attention on other matters which are to be given priority. So that's a side of it that one also ought to consider. But thanks for calling. It was good chatting with you. And yes, you are correct that, yeah, adultery apparently is offensive to God, but it is not offensive to the state. And I certainly was being facetious when I suggested that we should hang people for adultery, because it's not a crime. It is a national pastime, one might argue, but it certainly is not a crime. Donna Bastox, good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. 434-1790, you can call me or you can WhatsApp me on 233-7588. Yeah, hi. Mm-hmm.
Hi, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good.
Hope you're being safe and exercising the social distancing.
I'm trying to, as difficult as it is.
Yes, it's quite difficult. Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to reply to something you said earlier, Mr. Wickham. And I do agree with you that what you said about the subventions really and truly should have gone to the Democratic Labour Party. And I just want to take the opportunity to let you know that we have been vocal, particularly myself, we have been vocal about it on certain mediums, mostly not this one, but I will take the opportunity to let you know that I do agree. We don't normally agree on a lot of things, but I will tip my hat off to you this once in saying that I humbly agree with what you've just said. Despite what this revert that was not too nice in what he said to you, said, I think he needs to stick to his job, which is preaching, and keep out of politics.
He's a consumer advocate, sir.
On him.
He's a consumer advocate.
Yeah, right. Well, I don't know how he gets in there, reverend, whatever.
He's a reverend, but, too, but he's a reverend who is also a consumer advocate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, anyway, he needs to stick to his day job. Right. Moving on from that, I want to know if further measures have been taken in monitoring every passenger that comes to the airport, because do you share the view, or would you think that's highly likely that some people may have escaped the testing, you know, some people came in?
But nobody's tested. When they come in at the airport?
I mean, as far as this pandemic is concerned.
The temperature's taken.
No.
They have the temperature's taken.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's being enforced.
But anyhow, you asked the question. You're saying that what's my view on the...
Yeah.
To start with, sir, there's not a whole lot of people coming through our airport. That's the problem. With all of the flights being stopped for all intents and purposes, and with the requirement that anyone coming into Barbados from US, UK, and so on has to go through mandatory isolation. Mm-hmm. It means that not a lot of people are coming, and not a lot of people are coming through. The test at the airport that has been done is a temperature test. The challenge with this coronavirus is that you can be asymptomatic, which means that you can not demonstrate one of the symptoms, which is the high temperature, and you can have the virus. So the temperature test is useful. I mean, it's quick, it's useful, but it is possible for a person to travel successfully with all honesty and not knowing that they are reflecting high temperatures.
Right, and, because as has been said before, people can have that virus and not know because they're not exhibiting any symptoms.
Precisely.
Take for instance, so, I don't know if you've heard, the liberal minister in Canada, she has now contracted the coronavirus.
So tell me, what do you think would be your preferred approach under the circumstances?
Well, under the circumstances, well, first of all, before anybody even gets off the plane, period, I would, the doctors or whatever, will be tested first before they go on the plane, and test everybody, especially inside of the economy. Because in the economy, we get a large group of people, as you would know. You know, sometimes you have a family all the way down the back sitting who isn't coughing, is sneezing, who isn't sneezing. You know, there are all kinds of things that goes on in the economy. Sometimes, yes, in business travel as well, and in second class as well. But mainly in the economy section, you merely will be prone to such variables. So I would corral some professionals to go on the planes before they are even allowed, and then further test them as soon as...
Test them how? What, with the temperature?
Pardon me? Yes, with the temperatures, and probably even if something looks right, quarantine them, have a place put in place at the airport to quarantine some of them before they even enter on the bus to carry them wherever. That's
but in your quarantine them with what intention, sir? That's what I'm trying to understand.
I quarantine them with the fact that it once tested and you pick up, you have something in place that you pick up some kind of sign that something isn't kosher with the person, whether it be a young or old adult. You know, you then do it necessary, and then you, based off your findings of what or your suspicions, basically, you quarantine them to further tests that's been done in the airport itself. That's how I would have handled it. I don't know.
All right. Well, the problem, sir, is that it's probably not as easy as you might think. The test, as I understand it, takes hours to days. And then there's also a limited supply of testing kits. The question is, are you going to test every single person that comes in on a flight? Do you have the capacity to do that, bearing in mind that if you use a testing kit on a person who comes in like that, then what of the hundreds of thousands of other Barbadians that may want to be tested? So it is not as though there's a limited, unlimited supply. The test that is done, which is a temperature test, is something that you can temperature test everyone coming off a plane, which is easy. The challenge here is that the testing that you would like to see done on everyone coming into Barbados is not possible. Now, were it possible for us to do a simple test of a plane coming in and that would definitively prove whether the person has coronavirus or not, we wouldn't be in the situation we are today. Because if that could have been done, you could rest assured it would have been done a long time ago. It would have been done in China. It would have been done in the United States of America, the United Kingdom. It would have been very easy to say, well, let's just quickly test everybody that comes in, and if the persons pass the test, they come in, and if they don't, they stay out. It's,
and
however, not that easy.
Not cross you. Since you've mentioned that that would be the challenge in that area, what then, my question is, what then would be is the government looking into other sources to combat such a challenge so we would be equipped with the necessary means to do even further and more in-depth testing?
But what resources are you talking about? Like what?
I mean, what I'm trying to say is, now you just say to me that there is a challenge with that air that we can temperature test anybody, but we are not equipped with the...
But I don't know if anyone is.
Well,
I don't know of any civilization that has been able to say, well, let's test everyone. The United States has, what, 300 million people? I don't know that it has been possible to test all of them, or even 1% of them.
Well, take, for instance, China.
But China didn't do that either.
Yeah, but for some unknown reason, China was smarter than the Western world, because they locked off everything quite quickly. That's why they're able to say no. Certain people are able to walk around.
You're saying that, but you bear in mind that this whole thing started in China, and if they were really smart, the illness would not have been able to get out in the first place. Because there are many people who have argued that what China did in terms of locking down the country was a little too late. Because clearly, if it was done within a reasonable time frame, we wouldn't be in the situation we are in now. They would have contained it. So it's all right to talk about their success at containment, but their success at containment came after the fact. And after, clearly, there was a critical escape of the virus that has made its way into the Western world and is essentially...
Fair enough, right. But don't you find it at least bit interesting that they can be the first to jump out the box and say, well, they have contained, and then as you see on the world news what they've been saying? Don't you find that at least a bit interesting? I find it
it's interesting because it was the start. It was the first place that they started. The other challenge that the United States of America has, for example, is that they have to balance what rights the states have versus what rights the federal government has. In China, there's no such issue, because it's totalitarian rule. So you can lock down a city, you can lock down a town, you can lock down a county, you know, you can lock down a whole country. While in the United States of America, there's a limit to what a president can do in terms of locking down a place.
Just to end off, because we have a lot of other calls, I don't intend to take up the rest of the time. To end off, going back here to home, as I believe a caller said earlier, or I think it was yesterday, that I couldn't agree more, because it's quite disgusting the level that people really taking not serious the social distancing here in Barbados. And I don't find, especially a lot of the younger folk, are not taking it serious at all. Mm-hmm. You know, and they seem to be taking this as a joke. I see some people walking around with these weird kind of masks, which are not the correct masks to be used. you know, there's these kind of masks that you see the younger people use when they go setting these weird-looking things. And it's saying to me that they are, I don't want to use the word stupid, but there's a lack of common sense in that area. That means that they're really not paying attention to either what the powers that be are saying, or they're paying attention and they just don't realize. Now, there were some things issued to them that they need to do, whereas there's a number of passengers, people standing and sitting and what have you. You can rest assured a lot of them are not going to follow those precepts at all, because if things were put in place already for them, pertaining to certain things that they do on the road, and they haven't abided by those rules, you think they're going to abide by this? No. Right. A lot of them just don't care, because they care about one thing, and that's making the dollar bill, mm-hmm. which is all well and good, but which is more important, as I've always been saying alone, people before the economy. Okay. The economy is bare, but you have to put your own fellow man first. And mm-hmm. if there's something saying, as I see, stricter rules have to be in place, even in Vienna. If you follow the news in Vienna, they're charging them. They were charging them €260. Now, every man that does not follow the rule of social distancing is charged €500.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what you have to say about that part.
No, I think that all states have to take extreme measures to protect their interests, and that's exactly what some of the European states have been doing. If you see a situation where people are not being encouraged, then you have to then, you know, encourage their compliance by enforcing the rules, and sometimes those kinds of penalties are necessary. Sad, but true. And I agree with you, sir, that I don't believe a lot of people are taking social distancing seriously. A lot of young people especially don't get it. They don't understand it, and they are continuing as though, you know, life continues as normal. You know, you're still seeing bars and so on with people, you know, hanging about and drinking, and the blocks are still having people liming, and you know, it just doesn't strike me that people really get it. All right, sir. Well, thanks a lot for calling. It was good chatting with you. I have a WhatsApp message from someone. It says, Peter, adultery is indeed a moral crime, and you are right to classify it as a crime. Even though man does not recognize it, God will punish it and punish us like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember the pillar of salt in Lot's wife and the burning city with brimstone and fire. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. 1146-434-1790. 266-IVOB is the number you can call. Good morning.
Morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, good. How's your husband?
He's good. Well, stressed, but good.
Stressed?
Yeah. Yeah, this lockdown thing is challenging. Yeah.
It's driving him crazy, I guess.
Yeah.
Peter, I haven't come on this radio for a while during this, and spoke about this whole COVID thing.
You've been well?
Well, right. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm okay, good right now. Good. To be totally honest.
I just wanted to make sure that your absence of your voice wasn't because you were unwell.
No, not really. No. It's because there are too many mixed messages going all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's causing more confusion than anything else. People don't have a clear understanding. A lot of people don't. Some people do, but a lot of people really don't have a clear understanding of what to do or what not to do, or what is right and what is not right, and all that sort of stuff. For example, you have situations where you have told people, okay, you can't gather in groups of more than 10. But the observation is then that when you see people walking around the place and they're in groups of, let's say, 5 or whatever, then then you're saying that they are doing something wrong. And then they're saying, well, but you told me that you can't grab a group of 10, there's a group of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So even if we spread ourselves separately, six feet away from each other, you have situations where people removed all the, stopped you from forming lines inside of, let's say, supermarket or whatever. But then the line is formed outside of the supermarket, and there's no control over that.
But it should be.
I heard the situation where they stopped people from going to immigration, from stopping staying inside. And then you end up in this massive line outside with people just as close to each other. So all these different things that are going on. You have a situation where you've told people in the country, okay, show wear face mask. But then you go on TV And you see everybody in China walking about these same face masks. And they're saying, oh, well, they were successful there. So the question then is, well, if they're doing that, how can we not do it? We can't do it either. What sense does it make? There's so many mixed messages going on, right, that is causing more confusion than anything else. In terms of the situation that's going on, let's say with businesses and whether or not landlords and whether or not who is entitled or who should be given a reprieve or not paying their bill and all that sort of stuff. Again, causing more confusion than anything else. So what there has to be, in my opinion, is a clear, clear policy that is established by the authorities or whatever, that then is reinforced and repeated day after day after day. And one of the other problems is that people don't, in a lot of cases, don't trust the authorities. Because there would be arguments, say, well, you have, they say, well, we only have one or two cases being reported, and there's so many cases and stuff that you hear about, all these sort of stuff, and then people don't understand, well, one is a matter that of testing, have people been tested, all those different issues that made the things just so much more complex.
Yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. again, one of the
okay. Running all right. Just stick a pin. We're gonna come back in 2 minutes. We just have to take a few messages.